And here we are. Thank you very much. I'm Stacey Anderson. I'm from UCSF right here in San Francisco. And now we're going to talk about menthol. And you'll hear about menthol from me and the next speaker as well. Of course, we all need to say this. I do not have now any personal financial relationships with the tobacco industry or its allies or their front groups. Never have had. Intend never to have. And the research questions that I wanted to get at with this presentation are these. Are or were menthol cigarettes marketed with health reassurance messages? How do smokers tend to view menthol? What are the perceived sensory and taste rewards of menthol? And how do those perceived rewards relate to either initiation and or cessation? And I looked at these questions through how many of you are familiar with at least the existence of the Legacy Tobacco Documents Library? Ooh, right on. So you don't need the whole, like, this is from, you know, litigation against the tobacco industry, and blah, blah, blah. So you know about all this stuff. This is the search page. What you've got here is me entering just a couple of search terms. In this case, it's menthol and marketing and a term African-American. To look at a piece of some of those questions without specifying any other things like, you know, do I want to look at just specific companies or that sort of thing. And generally what you do is you start off with pretty broad search terms like these, and as you start reading through the return documents, you get a sense of who's involved in the subject area of interest, what, you know, what the names of the people are, what the project names that they're working on are, what kinds of companies that, you know, market research firms or strategy firms or that sort of thing are working on, you know, the area of interest and so on and so forth. And it's kind of like this great archival dig that gets you into, well, the corporate culture. All right, well, from the beginning, menthol cigarettes were advertised as a remedy to the burn and dryness and throat irritation that that accompany smoking. Menthol brands were all sold on this general platform. Here's one example here. This is Brown & Williamson's Cool. And the text stuff on the, I guess it's your right side, is kind of an analysis of the ad campaigns for Cool throughout the years. Brown & Williamson's brand was introduced as a product for occasional use that would promote throat comfort. The slogans were such that your throat will never get dry. It was presented as a brand to deal with smoker's hack. And in fact, the ad over here on your left side is for Cool from 1943, presenting the brand as a solution to raw throats when the smoker has a cold. Now, in 1964 brand evaluation, Brown & Williamson, the manufacturer of Cool, well, they're now part of Reynolds American as of about 6 years ago, but yeah, they were the original manufacturers of Cool. They noted that the emphasis on the throat with its important health implications has been an important part of Cool advertising since at least 1960. In light of the smoking climate, in recent years, this very well could have benefited the brand. The smoking climate, of course, being the growing public awareness that smoking kills you and it's very bad. A review of Cool advertisements from 33 to 80 conducted by a market research firm, Cunningham & Walsh, for Brown & Williamson revealed that they knew smokers perceived menthol as less harmful, which could have benefited the brand. Oops. Hey, I didn't want to do that. Let's go back to this. And we see that the explicit intent was to move Cool into the health reassurance segment, and that the product be perceived by consumers in the safety arena. And this stuff works. Menthol smokers do perceive of menthol cigarettes as safer. Here's a focus group. Sorry about that. Keep on bouncing around. Let's try that again. Here's a focus group study conducted for American Tobacco in 1969, where they observed that there were indications that menthol smokers subconsciously perceived menthol cigarettes as being healthier. There was somewhat of a health image associated with it because of colds and medicine and sore throats and stuff like that. And in 78, Brown & Williamson explicitly noted that the strength of its Cool franchise was that it rides on the connotation that menthol has health overtones. And 2 years later, in 1980, Brown and Williamson hears comments from research participants, interviewees, that they began smoking menthol cigarettes when they had a cold, and that menthol cigarettes are better for you. These beliefs about the relative healthiness of menthol does contribute to brand switching. Lorillard, the manufacturer of Newport, another one of the big standalone menthol brands, observed in 1972 that brand switching has resulted in a 13% gain for menthols, which is larger than the 8% for hi-fi brands, meaning high filtration brands, the other great scam perpetrated on the public. And these were the only two types that gained from brand switching. And people tended to say things like, well, I started smoking Cools when I had a cold, and so I just kept on smoking them. It felt so good. Well, Reynolds found in 73 that young people in particular like menthol because they're mild cigarettes, they feel smooth, they've got a cooling sensation. And Reynolds in 73 noted that because of its relative mildness, several respondents in another marketing research project reported that they can smoke a mentholated cigarette first thing in the morning. And we know that one measure of level of dependence is how soon after getting up do you smoke your first cigarette. All right. Booz Allen and Hamilton, a market strategy firm that did some work for R.J. Reynolds in 1990, said that in the face of threats to the industry volume, there's a role for menthol. The report that they gave to R.J. Reynolds emphasized that the original reason for menthol was therapeutic, providing a refreshing taste to hot, a refreshing alternative to hot, harsh tobacco taste, and that the product should provide a smooth smoking experience that is easy to adapt to. Well, Reynolds noted in 1980 that menthol smokers want to have a refreshing cigarette. They smoke menthol primarily to avoid the negatives that are associated with smoking. They want smoothness, mildness, clean taste, etc. Well, this has obvious implications for initiation. Here's R.J. Reynolds in 1986, a memo internally that noted that first-time smoker reaction is generally negative. The first time somebody picks up a cigarette and smokes it, it's generally kind of a negative thing. The taste is foreign, it's harsh and bitter. Adoption of smoking requires a slow acclimation. Now, notice that they're not talking here about competing for current smokers the way, you know, kind of the public line is. They are definitely talking about grabbing new smokers, and menthol helps alleviate some of the negatives of the initial shock of smoking. Here's Brown and Williamson noting in 1987 that menthol brands have been said to be a good starter product because new smokers appear to know that menthol covers up some of the tobacco taste, and they already know what menthol tastes like vis-a-vis candy. Here's the Sherman Group conducting a reconnaissance study of Lorillard's Newport brand for R.J. Reynolds because R.J. Reynolds was competing with their brand Salem in 1976, and the Sherman Group found that in rejecting the regular cigarette taste, smokers are referring back to their own experience. Young smokers begin smoking the popular brands, this means Marlboro, Winston, that kind of thing, Camel, and move to menthols for a variety of reasons. Their circumstances, the rejection of tobacco taste, searching for a milder cigarette, et cetera, et cetera, something that's easier to handle in an already irritated throat. Now, even among smokers who recognize the negatives associated with smoking, menthol is perceived to be something of a solution to the negatives and even an alternative to quitting. This is explicitly acknowledged in 1973. William Etze, who was doing some some market research on behalf of R.J. Reynolds in 73, he noted that generally when a respondent reported that he made a conscious decision to switch to mentholated brands, it was because of some problem, minor or major. Sometimes respondents saw smoking a mentholated brand as the only alternative to giving up smoking altogether. So it's probably not surprising that the Roper Organization, doing kind of a study of smoking attitudes and behaviors in 1979, found that menthol smokers were less had less desire to quit than non-menthol smokers did. Now here's British American Tobacco in 1982 saying that smoking menthol functions also as a guilt-reducing mechanism. Since it successfully alters the total smoking experience, some people choose menthols because they perceive them to be less intrusive or even less harmful than regular cigarettes. So less intrusive. Now, one main motivation for smokers to quit, obviously, is health. And menthol's cooling and soothing kind of alleviates some of that concern. And that is viewed as a potential opportunity for tobacco companies. The Landis Group, another market strategy firm doing research for Philip Morris in 1992, said that over half of the people that they interviewed for a study were non-menthol smokers at first, but they changed to menthol for a variety of reasons. They were sick, they wanted menthol was too hot, non-menthol was too harsh. And they note that we might have an opportunity then to convert non-menthol smokers to menthol smokers. And this stands in stark contrast to converting non-menthol smokers to non-smokers. You know, this is kind of redundant, so I'm going to skip over that one. And with respect to being less intrusive now, about the social unacceptability of smoking, menthol smokers believe menthol smoke to smell better and be less offensive to other people. Addressing social acceptability concerns, R.J. Reynolds was noting in 1990 in a brand positioning statement, a brand positioning report, that for Salem and Newport, two of the big standalone menthol brands, menthol served to lower the risk of offending others with odor and smoke. And specifically, Salem smokers tended to be concerned that, I'm imposing. My clothes smell bad. I want a less offensive cigarette. People object to smoking, et cetera, et cetera. Now, another potential example of a recent success, says RJR in this report, among menthol brands may be a brand called Horizon, a brand that was positioned to address social concerns about smoking. And they say that menthol may support Horizon's position as a solution to the social concerns. But there's kind of a problem with this. Here's Mindy Goldberg Associates reporting to RJR in 1991 that telling smokers that Horizon, this brand that they were talking about, will make them and or their surroundings smell better, it kind of implies that, well, you stink now. And people don't like to be told that they stink. This research firm is noting that they may prefer not to smoke a cigarette that blatantly brands itself as a solution to this problem. Let's just kind of keep that on the lowdown. And in fact, the Roper Organization study from 79 that we just talked about noted that menthol smokers are slightly less inclined than non-menthol smokers to feel uncomfortable smoking around other people. So, in answer to my first question, yes, menthol cigarettes were originally marketed on a health platform, and health messages were successfully communicated to consumers. Consumers believed that menthol cigarettes are better for them. Smokers tend to view menthol cigarettes as safer or less harmful than, quote, regular cigarettes and more socially acceptable. Menthol smokers perceive the minty or medicinal-like tastes and the anesthetic qualities, the cooling qualities and sensations. They think that that's good enough, that those perceptions tend to encourage initiation among people who would otherwise be put off from smoking and discourage quitting in people who might otherwise be really concerned about those things, health and social acceptability. So menthol's flavor, sensation, and perceived risk, perceived reduced risk, and the perceived social acceptability of this of these products attract young initiates, demotivate quitting in smokers who would otherwise quit, and making cigarettes more attractive to these groups contributes to the incidence of tobacco-related diseases, adds to the public health burden, and this is what menthol does. If the FDA is serious about the problem of flavoring additives in cigarettes contributing to the public health burden, then menthol has to be included in the list of banned additives, along with all of the other banned additives like cherry and margarita and so on and so forth.